Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. This is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. The Oregon State Legislature is currently out of session. During this interim period, as they do every year, legislative committees and task forces meet to be briefed on policies and to discuss legislative concepts, which will eventually be introduced as bills when the legislature officially reconvenes. Among the topics that the Senate and House Judiciary Committees have discussed in this interim period were deflection and law enforcement-assisted diversion programs. We'll listen to portions of that hearing on today's show. But first, Broadway, Bars, and Fortune, a compelling new 40-minute documentary from director and producer Shuvendu Sen, showcases how theater and the arts can serve as powerful tools for healing and redemption among formerly incarcerated people. I had the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Sen recently. Here's our interview. Could you give us a little background about the Fortune Society and its founder, David Rothenberg?
Yes, it's an amazing society. It was founded way back in the 1970s. And the founder, as you just say, David Rothenberg, is a very well-known Broadway personality. He was a PR back in the 1960s of some of the major Hollywood and Broadway actors and actresses, including Elizabeth Taylor, Richard Burton, Betty Davis. And then, and he was into, off-Broadway and Broadway theaters. One of the theater that he produced, Fortune in Men's Eyes, that particular theater was on former incarcerated man and woman. And he fell in love with the theater that he produced. And he thought that he would have a change in career and he would actually find, get an organization which is going to invite all the formerly incarcerated men and women into a society. And he would heal them through arts and theater. And so what this amazing personality did was he scripted a play called The Castle. And he would invite these men and women to be a part of the play. And in the play, this is not a sensational play with a lot of acting. It's something like Vagina Monologue, where they would just sit on the stage, on the stool, and they would just talk about their trauma, their travels, and their triumphant return to their lives. And it's almost like a catharsis, very, very therapeutic. And he saw the immediate effect, and he decided to pursue it. And David Rothenberg, interestingly, very much like you, though, he's actually a radio host of WBAI. And he's been a radio host since, well, I'll say 1975, 1976. And he talks about everything from society to politics to et cetera, and also about Broadway theaters. So I was actually on my way back home from my hospital and I was listening to his radio show. And he asked a question and I answered. And we thought that we liked each other voice-wise. And he said, why don't you come over to my studio? And he had trouble with my name also. And then that's how I met David. That's almost like 10 years back. And I said, David, I love your organization. This is something that I like to do on a completely voluntary basis. So he invited me to one of the Thursday meetings. That's an amazing meeting, though, they have, where all the former incarcerated men and women, they get together. And they just talk. They just talk to themselves. And they're just releasing their emotions, releasing their pent-up, emotions and memories, and some traumatic, some good, some funny. And that's where I was introduced, and I introduced myself, not as Dr. Sen, but with my first name, Neil. And I became friends with them. And I started going to Fortune Society, and I started mingling with these men and women, and I fell in love with these personalities. I thought they were amazing characters. They had violence in the background, but they were brought up in a violent atmosphere. So they got into violence very seamlessly. And then they created crimes, and then, they were incarcerated. And some of them were in jail for 30, 35 years, some in solitary prison. And most of them were in Rikers Island and tortured, But when they came out, they had nowhere to go. They had no identity. They had no self-respect. They weren't getting anything from the society. That's when they joined Fortune Society. They got back the respect, the God back. The first thing David told me, when was the last time these people actually got appreciated, applauded, and acknowledged? So I put them on the stage. And whatever they say, there's so much amount of acknowledgement from the audience. There's no recidivism. They are not going back to crime. They're not going back to jail anymore because they found the new way of life. And then after almost 5, 6 years, I told David, you know what, David, I'm going to write about. Because I was, by the time, already an established author, my previous book on Alzheimer's and meditation that was doing very well. And he said, good luck. And then I approached a couple of publishers and there's not much of interest. And that's when I came up with a grand idea. And I said, and I have also done some training in NIFA, New York Film Academy, in screenplay writing, et cetera, et cetera. And I told, I'm going to go ahead and do a documentary. And I got amazing help from someone called Carl Berdosh. He's a professor of films at the Kanbar Film Institute at NYU. And I approached with my story and script. He loved it so much. He said, you know what, Shivendu? You're going to direct it. And I'm going to help. So that's it. And I approached David. And we picked up those four characters with whom I was actually very close. Interesting part I wanted to share with you, though, is that 3, 4 years back, maybe just when we were coming out of the pandemic, 2021, 2022, we actually, all of us, myself, David, and those four inmates turned actors, Casimiro Torres, Philip Hunt, Easy, and Wilma. So 5 of us, we were in an NYPD van and we went right into Rikers Island and with permission from NYPD. And they have an auditorium and they all performed there in front of the same correctional officers, which they were dealing with for many, many years. It was a fantastic performance. I was allowed to record it. That's also in my documentary. And what can I tell you, though? When they finished, there was pin drop silence. And then suddenly there was a scream from the correctional officer. They all stood up right from the gut. And the appreciation that came, it was so overwhelming for me, for David, for the actors, for everyone present there. So, and that's how the documentary came. The documentary is just about this man and woman talking about themselves. Poignant, emotional, raw. And also, I was lucky. David was obviously in the film, but I also got lucky because there were some very reputed Hollywood actors and actresses who were with Fortune Society, who have been with Fortune Society, like Christine Ebersole, the 2-time Tony Award winning actress. So she's in my documentary. She's a great friend of mine. Masha Kurz, who acted with Al Pacino. And so on and so forth. They were all in my documentary. And believe it or not, these theaters have changed this personality so much that some of the biggest names of Hollywood, like Richard Gere, he came over to Harlem, he parked his car in front of Fortune Society, met up with David Rothenberg, and actually with one of my actors, inmates turned actors, Casimiro Torres, he had a great discussion about a research of a certain character that he wanted to put in a certain movie. And Wilma, for instance, the only female in my documentary, she's gotten to play in many HBO movies, and they've played in Central Park, and they do Shakespeare. It's an amazing transition from one arc of life, which was violence, which was trauma, which was so much of suffering, to an amazing fulfillment, where it's, I don't know what else to say, I'm short of words. It's their healing process, it's their therapy, it's their catharsis, they have now become role models. I tell Wilma, you're not a role model just for the former incarcerated man and woman. You're a role model for me as a physician, me as a community person, how to turn things back. And so my documentary is about, starts with them and it ends with them. And I'm just fortunate that I'm a part of this tremendous journey. That's all I can say, though.
So how's the film been received so far?
Great. Great. It is already, we finished it in the month of April. It's just been a few months, but it already got selected. It has its own official selections in the New York Lifter Film Festival, then the International Hispanic Film Festival, San Quentin Film Festival for next year.
How can people keep up with your work? Social media, website, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I have a website, where I give all information about that. It's www.shivendusen.com, if we can go through it. And then there's a Facebook on the picture itself, Broadway Bars and Fortune. And then Portland Society. Portland Society is so happy and so grateful for all that's happening. Very recently, though, there was a great review by another radio host, for a radio and a TV host in England, Mr. Lambert. He wrote a great review there. So that also spread far and wide and got picked up by Google. So it just started to spread. And then I got invitations from various countries like Singapore and Indonesia to screen this film in their embassies. And so it's taking off. And we are very happy about it.
Again, folks, we're speaking with Shivendu Sen, MD. He's the producer and director of a new documentary, Broadway, Bars, and Fortune, a film that celebrates New York City's The Fortune Society, one of the country's leading reentry organizations for formerly incarcerated people, and the life-changing impact of theater programs. Any closing thoughts for the listeners?
Well, all I can say is that I'm very fortunate to have known this man and woman. I think they are great people. And if my documentary does anything, it is just opening up the door for us to have a much better understanding of them as human beings. They've gone through trauma, but the way they show their indomitable courage to come back to life is, I think, a message for all of us.
Dr. Sen, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Tom. It was a pleasure.
That was my interview with Dr. Shivendu Sen. He's the director and producer of a powerful new documentary entitled Broadway, Bars, and Fortune, which showcases how theater and the arts can serve as powerful tools for healing and redemption among formerly incarcerated people. You're listening to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now, as I mentioned at the top of the show, the Oregon State Legislature is currently out of session. During this interim period, legislative committees and task forces meet to be briefed on policies and to discuss legislative concepts, which will eventually be introduced as bills when the legislature officially reconvenes each January. The Senate and House Judiciary Committees met in joint session on September 30th. One witness panel was entitled Seattle Lead and Lane County Deflection Overview. On today's show, we're going to hear what that panel had to say. Let's start with Arturo Zamudio, Lead Supervisor and Community Outreach Manager for the Lane County LEAD Program.
For the record, my name is Arturo Zamudio. I'm the supervisor for the Navigators with Ideal Option. I've worked in the behavioral health field for over 20 years and hold certifications as a certified alcohol and drug counselor too, a qualified mental health associate, and a peer support specialist. I also bring lived experience. I come from a family with generational substance use, child welfare involvement, and the correction system. Thanks to the support of law enforcement and peer support, the cycle ended with me. Today, two generations in my family have been spared from continuing it. The Navigator program is available to Lane County law enforcement 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. The strength of our work comes from our partnership with law enforcement. Referrals have come from 11 different departments across Lane County. For years, officers had very few tools beyond incarceration. Navigators give them a different option, one that connects people to services before they enter the system. This doesn't just help law enforcement and individuals in crisis. It makes our entire community safer and saves the public dollars. Here's how it works. When an officer encounters someone who may meet deflection criteria, they call what we call the bat phone. A navigator responds on site, meets with the individual, and offers voluntary services. All of our navigators have lived experience. That creates a powerful moment when someone who has lost hope meets someone standing in front of them as proof that change is possible. From there, we help with immediate needs. Food, clothing, shelter, and within 24 hours, we complete an intake and individualized service plan. Every participant sets a goal around their substance use disorder, but how they pursue it, detox, medicated assisted treatment, counseling, that's their choice. Navigators walk alongside them, removing barriers, attending appointments, and providing intensive case management so they don't have to do it alone. Again, I've been doing this work for over 20 years, and I was also in the system for almost as long, even as a child in the foster care system, and then as an adult with my own children. navigating these services are really, really hard. And in Lane County, that's what I really am proud of, is that all the navigators have that lived experience, so people don't have to try and figure that out. At the same time, they're focusing on getting clean and sober. So it's an additional support there that they don't have to do it alone. Let me share two success stories that show how recovery can look different. Participant one engaged right away, stayed with the same provider, and graduated in just over the 90-day minimum. Participant two needed multiple levels of care and different providers, and they stayed with us as long as the program had existed in Lane County. It was a long road, but they graduated successfully as well. Change takes time, especially for people with severe use history, so it's not always a quick fix. Both stories are victories. One shows how recovery can take root quickly. The other shows that even when it takes longer, persistence and support can still lead to success. In closing, the Navigator program is about more than services. It's about hope, dignity, and public safety. It gives officers a tool they've long needed. It supports people at their most vulnerable, and it strengthens our communities.
That was Art Zamudio, lead supervisor and community outreach manager for the Lane County LEAD program, testifying before a joint meeting of the Oregon Legislature's House and Senate Judiciary Committees on September 30th. Now, in this next segment, we'll hear a joint presentation by the last two speakers on that panel. They're Lisa Dugard, co-executive director of Purpose Dignity Action, and Malika Lamont, Washington LEAD technical support director at Purpose Dignity Action and director of Vocal Washington.
Thank you to the committee and the co-chairs for having us. My name is Lisa Dugard. I'm co-executive director at Purpose Dignity Action, formerly the Public Defender Association, PDA, headquartered in Seattle. We both co-designed and still manage the flagship LEAD Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program in Seattle, King County, but we also have a technical assistance project within PDA that supports communities around Washington State and elsewhere in the country who have replicated this model or are moving in the direction of a high fidelity deflection effort. And we've had the privilege of working both with the Criminal Justice Commission, other state-based architects of Oregon's deflection efforts, and we're especially honored to have been able to visit and be in dialogue with four counties in Oregon that are really killing it, just doing exceptional work. This work is very hard to do well and very easy to do badly. So I think the main thing we want to get across today, if we run out of time, is that there are several regions in your state that are really laying a very strong foundation. And even though this is hard work to do, it's incredibly important to do it. Number one, it is the road that best supports recovery and reduces crime when done well. Ton of evidence to support that. The LEAD model has been evaluated by Arnold Ventures in a really rigorous study, finding dramatic reductions in crime, reductions in prison admissions, jail stays, felony filings, if done well. And you have multiple counties in the state that are really laying that foundation. I'll turn it over to Malika to do the next section, and then I'll wrap it up. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. My name is Malika Lamont, and I'm the director of the Washington State Technical Support Team. And we work with all of the Arrest and Jail Alternative, LEAD Proper, and Recovery Navigator programs across our whole entire state. There is a presence of LEAD in all 39 counties in Washington State at this time through the coordinated action of our legislature, just to give you a little bit of context. And so traditionally, as we've been talking about, public safety has been relegated to law enforcement and the justice system, as indicated by the sequential intercept model that we're seeing right here. LEAD is designed to work at the 0 and 1 intercept. I also think through a lot of the testimony that you've heard today that folks that are experiencing substance use disorder and other behavioral health issues come in contact with a lot of the other systems that you've heard testimony from today. But as the LEED model has demonstrated, has long demonstrated, you can advance public safety by reorganizing the framework to use community-based resources as an off-ramp from the criminal legal system. As you see in this graphic, overlays deflection onto the intercepts 0 and 1 that I mentioned earlier on the sequential intercept model. Getting people off the criminal legal track when appropriate creates space to align existing entities and resources in coordinated community-based care and services to address underlying needs that oftentimes individuals need beyond just a law enforcement response. Effective diversion approaches have a few things in common. They're established and coordinated upstream interventions at the earliest point possible, ideally. They reduce reliance on the crisis system and on the justice system, and because ideally people's behaviors are starting to get stabilized. They utilize effective evidence-based approaches to build a positive diversion model of care in each community. And there is a bright line. The act of referring a case for prosecution is the point at which it is no longer a deflection or diversion anymore. Whether you call it diversion or deflection, whether a diversion is made by a law enforcement officer or a community member really makes no difference. Deflection focuses on addressing underlying needs of the individual through community-based resources that have been coordinated to provide that care. True diversion and deflection always operates pre-filing, and that is really the bright boundary of diversion and deflection.
So deflection happening pre-filing has one really important benefit in the budget environment that both Oregon and Washington and many other states are confronting, and that is that if there's an effective response without filing a charge, lawyers do not need to be assigned. So that has both workforce benefits and budgetary benefits. But this is a discretionary environment. Law enforcement does not have to deflect under yours and Washington's current legal framework. So how do we achieve the decision to do that? There's really no other way but the road that Lane County is really excelling in demonstrating, which is to build credibility through meaningful partnership with law enforcement, exchange of information, demonstrating efficacy, and continuous, sort of a continuous improvement framework. This has to work, or police will lose faith in it and just send cases to lawyers to process as we have always done. It can work, but in order to achieve that, we need to ensure that the second response, if you will, not who comes first, but what comes second, is really robust. And flagging, we are not here to promote the brand LEED. Really, our practice arose from real life experience in what it took to actually generate strong outcomes for people. And some key elements are all the players that are going to have repeated interactions with folks who do commit law violations related to behavioral health issues and poverty need to be coordinated. You can't have the left hand and the right hand both receiving state funding to do things working at cross purposes. So everybody needs to coordinate, move in the same direction. You have to have sustained support. It's easy, honestly, to deflect by just not taking on a case. But the test is really whether or not we are providing the sustained support that most people with complex, severe substance use disorder need in order to genuinely recover. That may take months or years. So having the resources that match that need is essential. Lane County is absolutely on the right track to add in transitional housing or shelter to support people in beginning that journey. Without it, it's very slow and success is much reduced. The core components of the LEED model are a specific focus, not on people who are sort of passing through a community and incidentally have some kind of drug charge, but people who are chronically committing many law violations, are chewing through a lot of resources in the legal system, but to very little avail in terms of individual recovery or reducing recidivism. A structured framework for the partnership and cooperation of all of the entities that need to participate, And let me just flag this last point. I've stressed sustained case management and how important that is to individuals doing well. It's also in this budget environment incredibly important because it is probably the one way that people who cannot work will be retained on Medicaid when the work requirements of federal Medicaid reform come into play in a couple of years. Case managers can jump through that certification requirement every 6 months, certifying that somebody cannot work if they can't, and retain Medicaid benefits. Without sustained case management, it's incredibly unlikely that those otherwise eligible Medicaid recipients are going to retain that benefit. So that has obvious benefits to our states in continuing to pull down Medicaid support for these individuals.
So whatever you call it, deflection or diversion, call it by the lead name or something else, if implemented with fidelity and supported by statewide training, tools, and resources, the model can statewide improve public safety, retain Medicaid enrollment, and reduce the need for legal counsel. What we have been able to see across Washington State is from our least populated and largest geographic county to our most populated county, we have been able to implement LEAD in order to address the needs of folks with profound behavioral health needs, as well as the communities that are experiencing some of the consequences of that. We are seeing promising examples in multiple areas that are intentionally implementing the model with fidelity while allowing for local adaptation to meet the local realities. Mm-hmm. To cite just a few examples here in Oregon, Hood River and Wasco is adopting a multi-county regional approach. Lane County, as you've heard, is utilizing a hotel-based adaption. Marion County has countywide LEAD. And we're seeing more than one county launch a strong deflection LEAD program can help build inter-county conversation about what works. And deflection is not easy. That's something to keep in mind. But when you have everybody working off the same sheet of music, you can start moving towards making those holes in the safety net in your community smaller. And we have been able to start to see that in Washington State with our implementation of Recovery Navigator program.
You just heard Lisa Dugard, Co-Executive Director of Purpose, Dignity, Action, and Malika Lamont, Washington LEAD Technical Support Director at Purpose, Dignity, Action, and Director of Vocal Washington. They testified September 30th before a joint meeting of the Oregon Legislature's House and Senate Judiciary Committees. And for now, that's it. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline is a volunteer production for Community Radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's AudioPort service. Please support your local public media and community radio stations. Become members. Become volunteers. Find this and other installments of Prison Pipeline on the web at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. You'll also find a link there to subscribe to the Prison Pipeline podcast. Prison Pipeline has a Facebook page. It's at facebook.com/prisonpipeline. Please give its page a like. Share it with friends. Join us again next week for another edition of Prison Pipeline. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! So long.